Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Plus $830 trade-in slash promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to The Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into another episode of The Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by RotoBaller. This is episode 364. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross, and with me, as usual, is my 80-grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, how's it going, bud?
It is going good. We're in the midst of a fun auction league dynasty draft going on right now, so just hammered up a bid on Julio Rodriguez as we speak. So, and we're going to dive in on the outfield, so it's going to be a good episode for sure. Chugging along with the offseason. How are we midway through January?
Dude,
I don't know. It's a month from spring training, basically, at this point. So before we know it, it'll be here.
I know a lot of the, I think most pitchers and catchers teams report like the 12th or 13th. I think a couple are on the 11th. The Cubs are a little bit earlier on the 9th, I believe. We're under a month, because I don't think any team reported after the 13th. So it's currently the 14th when we're recording this. So yeah, we are under a month. Look at that. Inching closer and closer. You've already seen some, you know, the early reports to camp, getting some extra work in. So, yeah, outfield, though, we that the auction league, Chris just mentioned, jump in as well. I've already gotten three players. We're doing quick just background on it. It's 15 teams. We're all auctioning our first 10 players. We have $200 budget to get those 10 players. Then we'll do, you know, snake draft. For the rest of it, I've already gotten four players, three of which are outfielders that we'll be talking about tonight. I already got Roman Anthony, Wyatt Langford, and Jaron Duran, and also a closer, randomly, Emmanuel Class A. So, I have a weird start for me, but like the players I got. So, what a fun names at this outfield position. I mentioned last episode, I think 14 of my top 25 in my dynasty rankings are outfielders, with Jackson Merrill being right there at the outfield 14, and which people think is low, but he's all 45th overall. It's just this position is absolutely loaded, even more than usual. You know, obviously, we have the studs that have been there for the last several years. We have a lot of the young guys emerging now. So this is a freaking loaded position. But before we get into all the fun names, we'll get into the housekeeping here. You can find us on Twitter. Chris is at Chris Clegg MILB. I am at Eric Cross MLB, and the show is at Toolshed Pod. If you enjoyed the podcast, please rate and review. Make sure you check out both of our personal platforms, thedynastydugout.com and toolshedfantasy.com for more work from each of us. All of our rankings are there. I know I'm going through team prospect rankings now. Chris is going through positionally, which we've already done the opposite of that, so we're kind of flip-flopping from each other. So a lot of good stuff on both of those platforms. Check that out. And, of course, you can check out all the great content going on over at RotoBaller. Use that code TOOLSHED to get 10% off any premium package over at rotoballer.com. A lot of great content over there on Rotoballer. One last thing before we get into the episode, though, and unfortunately it's not a good thing. A member of Chris's Dynasty Dugout Discord, Alec Owen, lost his home in those unfortunate California fires that are still raging on out there. So I'll throw it over to Chris to have some ways to donate and help Alec out and his family out in this time of need.
Yeah, unfortunately, sad news there. I mean, can't imagine what Alec's going through. I just can't even fathom losing everything that I had in a fire. But this is a member of the Dynasty community in general, and I think that this is a time where we come together and give back. So I'm going to donate basically any new member that joins the dugout this month. I'm going to donate those proceeds for it. But if you'd like to help, you can find my tweet about it. I'll actually link the ways you can send Alex some money in the description of the show, but you can Venmo, Cash App, or PayPal, Alec Owen, O-W-E-N, and I'll link those in the description. So if you'd like to do that and help out, be really awesome. And I think that this is just a time where, you know, in tragedy, you know, it's helpful to have people by your side and that come together for you. And so that's what I would like to do for Alec, and just give back, because, you know, so many people have been gracious to me and support our show. So the least we can do is give a little back. So if you'd like to help out, that's how you can. You can donate in several ways. So if you subscribe to The Dugout this month, I'll just basically turn around and donate it. So there you get multiple things. You donate and you get a membership for the Dynasty Dugout. So however you'd like to, I'll link the ways you can send them money directly as well. So
yeah, it's as you mentioned, I can't even imagine. Feel really bad for Alec and his family. But yeah, so as Chris mentioned, we'll have it in the description of this show on all the platforms. And also, Chris had tweeted it earlier today on Twitter. I have retweeted it personally, and the Toolshed account has also retweeted it. So you can find that, and that contains, you know, Venmo, Cash App, PayPal, etc. So there are several different ways you can help out. And yeah, it's you know, I've seen this community, even so, you know, like the fantasy football community, too, when Mike Tagliere unfortunately passed away a few years ago, rallied around his family, his wife, and his kids. So definitely, you know, this community, you know, we get into it on Twitter sometimes, we can rally around each other and definitely help out another person in need. So unfortunate, so hopefully we can help out and give this a little help to someone that needs it right now. So all right, into the outfield now, though. Again, loaded position. We're breaking this up into two episodes. So today, on, you're listening to this on Wednesday, or it's dropping on Wednesday, it'll be part one. We'll do the top 20, and then we'll do the rest of the top 50 in part two, which will be out on our usual late week Friday slot. So you get three episodes of the Tool Shed this week. So let's start with we're doing top 20. So we'll divide this episode up into like top 10, talk about some players, and then do 11 through 20. So starting with the top 10, Chris, who you got?
Alrighty, so I've got Juan Soto at the top spot, followed by Kyle Tucker, Ronald Acuna Jr., Julio Rodriguez, and Jackson Churio. And then looking at 5 through 10, I have Aaron Judge, Fernando Tatis Jr., Corbin Carroll, Wyatt Langford, and Yordan Alvarez.
Yeah, this is so loaded. Like, my top 10 goes to like number 17 overall. And like I said, I have 14 in the top 25. And 17 in my top 29, then there's a little teardrop there. So, yeah. Loaded, I got Juan Soto, Ronald Acuna Jr., Kyle Tucker, Aaron Judge, Fernando Tatis Jr. at number 5. 6 through 10, Corbin Carroll, Mookie Betts, Wyatt Langford, Julio Rodriguez, and James Wood. 10 overall, and number 17 overall in my top 500. But let's start. It's weird, too, as I was mentioning, like, you know, two of like the top three or so, like Chris's top two and then two of my top three, both changed teams with Soto going to the Mets and Tucker going to the Cubs. But we're not going to start there. We're going to start with two of the more, I hate to use the word polarizing, but I think they become a little bit risky, and it's kind of now wondering, is the risk worth the elite price tag? And that's with the two of the juniors, Fernando Tatis Jr. and Ronald Acuna Jr. Obviously, his second big knee injury this past year for Ronald Acuna Jr. Then we've had some injury issues with Tatis, the PED suspension. He's never played 150 games in a year. You know, obviously, these two guys are two of the most talented and exciting baseball players on the entire planet. But you kind of got to wonder, you know, is it, again, worth the elite, you know, top 10 overall price tag, Chris? You know, What do you think? I know you either just got Tatis or you're bidding on Tatis in that auction league, right?
Yeah, I got Tatis earlier today for $54 bid, which may seem high, but like compared to some of the other names for reference, I mean, Churio went for $62, Aaron Judge $64, Corbin Carroll $61. So I think in general, like the Soto $74. Tucker 67, just looking at some others. I think, in general, the price tag is a little down on him. I mean, Jackson Merrill almost went for the same price as Fernando Tatis Jr. did. And while that, I understand it, like Tatis definitely had a bit of a down year, but I do believe that there's going to be a season where it all comes together. It's going to be pretty special. Yeah, I mean, last year, 21 homers, 11 steals. Like, you obviously desired more. It was a shorter season for Tatis, who has dealt with injuries throughout his career as well. So, like, that's, he's not been immune to the injury bug. He just turned 26 at the beginning of January, so still plenty of good years ahead of him. And there was also reports that he played through pretty much the whole season with injury, too, that could have affected him. All the while, like, I look at what a Fernando Tatis Jr. did last year, and I still find a lot of value. Obviously, all the hard hit rate, the exit velocities, the barrel rates are off the charts with Tatis. I mean, those numbers, extremely good. The bat speed's elite. The contact rates, you know, they're inconsistent. And I think that's kind of a little bit of the concern here. But they actually did improve in 2024. We saw the contact rates take a step forward. The end zone contact rate jumped about 3 percentage points for Tatis. The overall, 2.5 percentage points. So pretty notable there. Tatis cut the chase rate by 4 percentage points. So we did see some positive trends in the profile, in my opinion. I think he's still going to run. I mean, he stole 11 last year. I think that's going to be a little bit of an outlier. We'll see. I mean, I hope that we'll look back and say, like, yeah, I mean, that was the outlier. Because considering he played through a leg injury, reportedly, like, that could have affected his ability or desire to run. So, yeah, I mean, I think that given the depleted price, like, I don't know if you'll need to pay a top 10, you'll have to pay top 10 outfielder value, of course, but Tatis's overall dynasty value has taken a little bit of a hit, and I think that does create a buy-in opportunity for you, where if you think that there's, you know, another step, I guess, for Tatis, like, then you pay the price and you profit. I also think the floor and the name value are high enough where it doesn't really hurt you all that much if you draft him or you trade for him right now. Because I'm looking at the dollar amounts for some of these other, and I get it, like, it's one auction draft's not the best way to go about looking at this, but just compared to some of the other outfielders, like, I still feel like Tatis has a good buying opportunity on him, and there's plenty to, you know, still dream on for a young player with all the talent in the world.
Yeah, it's scary to think that, you know, he's had a 42-25 year, and we might see more than that. I mean, remember, that was in 130 games, too. Like, that wasn't even a full year. That was, like, what, 80% of a full year from Tatis. And, yeah, that was, what year was that? Yeah, 2021. So that was, you know, a few years ago now. And obviously, he didn't play at all in 2022 because of injury and suspension. But he's become really difficult for me to rank, because obviously, I mean, you see the talents there. I mean, he's combined for 46 home runs and 40 steals in the last 2 years, just his 243 games played, which is about, what, 75% of, you know, the combined total games for those 2 years. You know, a bunch of doubles as well. I don't know, but it's like, do I want to pay, you know, a top 10 price tag on him, or would I rather go after, you know, one of these younger guys that we're about to talk about? But the price tag on those guys is getting pretty high too. So, I mean, it's both these guys are risky. And obviously, Acuña just came off a 41-74 year in 2023. But outside of that, Acuña's had the two massive years, 2019, 2023, when he went 41-37, and still only finished fifth in the MVP voting. I'm not sure how that happened. Had 127 runs that year as well. And then even bigger, 2023, 41-73, 149 runs, led the league in, you know, runs, hits, steals, OBP, OPS, etc. And got the MVP deservedly so, 8.2 WAR that year. So, but then every other year, it's like, all right, he missed around half the year in 2021, missed about a quarter of the year in 2022, missed, you know, two-thirds or even a little bit more than that last year. You know, with Acuña, Chris, I feel like, do you think he's more risky at this point, given the multiple big injuries, more risky than Tatis right now?
Probably. I mean, that's two severe injuries. And, you know, I've really struggled, honestly, with how in the world do I rank Ronald Acuña Jr.? And, you know, as I've updated the dynasty rankings, I've struggled with where he lands. I've had him anywhere from like 7 to 14. And I just ultimately don't know what to do with Acuña, because what does he look like coming back? Do we have any precedence for any other player that's torn both ACLs? He plays the game so hard, I think he's going to have to come back and play it a little bit differently, which does that mean he steals less? I think that's going to be hard to do for him. Acuña is a player that loves, when he gets on the bags, he's antsy to steal bases. He plays too hard in the outfield. Not that that's a bad thing, but it has led to an injury. I mean, the first time it was in the outfield when it happened. So I honestly worry, like, I've tried to do some research on how those injuries, you know, how athletes recover. And the reality is most of the time they're never back to 100%. Also, I think this year we're going to see Acuña struggle on the field. We saw it the first year he came back from the first surgery. And I think there's going to be some struggles this year too, especially with the ability to lift the ball. That's a major thing for players with these ACL injuries, is that they struggle to lift. And now we've had both legs have the injury. Like, what's that look like? And I don't have a great answer. I think it's a risky investment, but I do think it could be a worthwhile investment, because I think there is still value in what Acuña brings to the table. He's still young. I think he's still got his best days potentially ahead of him if he can just stay healthy. Does that mean he goes 40-70 again? Probably not. I would never put that expectation on him, but I do think Acuña can get back to being a player that hits 25, 30 home runs, and then maybe steals 25 bases, and there's a lot of value in that. So, you know, I don't know. I don't have a great answer. Like, what does he look like coming back? I wish I knew, but right now it's just you're hoping for the best and kind of expecting not the worst, but you're not expecting the Acuña that we've seen in the MVP seasons.
Right. Like, I think it's fair to say that maybe his two best years are behind him. Maybe that 2019 and 2023 years will be the best 2 years of his career. It's still very early to say that. He's still, is he even 20? Yeah, he just turned 27 a few weeks ago back in December. So still very young. And you know, he could easily go, you know, I wouldn't say this year, obviously, because we saw how it, you know, how he kind of took a little bit to come back from the last one, where he was still good, but, you know, more of a mere mortal baseball player than a superhuman one, as we've seen from him in those 2 years. But could he get back to 30-30 at some point? Yeah, I think he absolutely could. But I feel it's weird. It's weird. I think there's a wider range of outcomes for him than Tatis. I mean, I think there's another level of upside, or a little more upside for Acuña. We've seen that, especially if he comes back and he's still running a ton, even if it's a little bit less than he used to. It's still, you know, 30 plus deals, still better than most. But I think the downside is a bit lower right now than Tatis. So obviously, I still have them both in my top 10 overall. I have Acuña 6 and Tatis 9 currently. And, you know, I've been flip-flopping Acuña and Tucker. I might move Acuña down below Tucker here. But they're still both top 10 guys, because, you know, some of these other guys in the 11 through 20 range either are getting a little bit older, like, you know, Joe Ram and whatnot, Mookie Betts, or I haven't quite seen enough to put them top 10 yet, like a Langford or a James Wood, something like that. So maybe one of those guys comes up and takes the spot, and if we still see more, you know, of the same from these two, or especially Tatis, maybe I'll drop him down a little bit more into that teens range. But, you know, hopefully this year, I mean, he just turned 26 not too long ago. I just want to see another full year, or even give me another 130-plus games from him, and hopefully we can get another huge year from him and kind of solidify the make me feel better about ranking him as a top 10 guy. But yeah, definitely a lot of risk with these two as well. Two of the younger guys that kind of alluded to here, Corbin Carroll and Julio Rodriguez, both had, I mean, not bad years by any means, but I think a little bit underwhelming given expectations on these guys. I think you could say they were, you know, just down from what we'd hoped they were going to do. Corbin Carroll was really, really a tough, weird year for him. Obviously, he was coming back from the shoulder issue. Maybe that plagued him a little bit. I think it absolutely did. And he went on a tear second half of the year, was one of the best hitters in baseball. And Rodriguez kind of up and down, overall still a good year, but it kind of fell short. I mean, he went 20-24, Rodriguez did, in 143 games, 76 runs, 68 RBI, 273, 325, 409 slash line. So, again, still a good year, but a bit underwhelming. Carroll overall, still got up to 22 home runs and 35 steals, even if he needed a huge power surge in the second half to get there. Led the league in triples again with the slash line, 231, 322, 428. So, Chris, how are you valuing these? Obviously, we both still have them really, really high, obviously, but, you know, how much stock are you putting into what you saw this past year from each of them? Like, you think, you know, I think each of these guys has been ranked top five at one point or another, and top five within the last 12 to 18 months. So do you think there's a path that I'm getting back to top five, or you think they're more like in that second tier and like that 6 to 12 range?
I mean, I don't think it's crazy to say either could jump back in. You look at the profiles for both, and, you know, Carroll had a weird year. I mean, there was speculation, you know, pretty much all year. Was it the shoulder? Like, why was he so bad at the beginning of the year? The bat path's terrible. Like, all the things with Corbin Carroll. But he still wound up going 22-35 from a home run stolen base standpoint. And while the average was not what, you know, we've come to know for Corbin Carroll, I think it still was fine. Like, obviously, it's not what you wanted, but he made better contact this year than he did in 2023 in his big season. We saw the zone contact rate take a jump by 1 percentage point for Carroll, and even the overall contact rate jump as well. He chased less. Sure, there were some other things that kind of regressed in some ways, but at the end of the day, I think Corbin Carroll absolutely can get back to being that kind of top five player. And honestly, like, it's kind of been a revolving door at the top 10 and five of who's kind of in those spots. Like, how do they fit in? And with Carroll, he's still so young. He's 24 years old. And while he's not going to light up the exit velocity leaderboards, he's going to get to home run power. You know he's going to steal bases. He's an elite runner. And I think he gets back up well above 35 this year. He had 54 in his rookie year. See no reason why he doesn't kind of surpass the 35 that he did last year. So, you know, if Carroll's a 25-40 guy, then great value, I think. And his value is only going to rise. And with Rodriguez, even again, with a down year, Rodriguez still hit 20 home runs. He stole 24 bases. I mean, at the end of the day, like, I think Julio Rodriguez was still valuable. I do wonder if there was some underlying stuff, and I have no clue, to be honest with you. Like, if he was dealing with some things, I don't know. The results obviously are not what we expect from a Julio Rodriguez type, who previously had elite seasons. It was coming off a 32-37 season in 2023. Now, can Julio Rodriguez get back to that? I mean, I think so. It's an interesting profile with Rodriguez because he's aggressive and he chases a lot. Did just catch up to him this year. We did see the exit velocities take a small step back, but it wasn't enough where it's like, okay, I can't, you know, he's still at 92 mile an hour average exit velocity. He had still had an elite sprint speed. Yeah, I mean, the contact rates, could they be better? Sure. But I'm not ready to write Julio Rodriguez off yet. And I think there's still a potential buying opportunity here as well where you can profit and potentially get that 2023 version of Julio Rodriguez again at some point. And again, we're talking about a 24-year-old, so somebody with still best days ahead of him.
Yeah, I do feel a bit more confident in saying Carroll can get back to top five than Rodriguez, because Rodriguez is so aggressive, you know, chase rate super high. Contact rate is a little bit on the lower end. He was below 70% contact this year, 79% in zone, you know, chase rate 37%. And that's kind of, he's been over 37% each of the last 2 years. So I think that's going to limit him to some degree. I mean, obviously, he's still very, very good, one of the best players in baseball. So it's not like it's limiting him majorly, but I kind of wonder if he gets held back from getting back to that top five range until he kind of learns to be a little more patient, learn to, you know, hunt out those pitches to drive and kind of wait for that pitch. Could he do that? Absolutely. Obviously, that he's still very young. He's only 24 years old, so still very, very young. That could absolutely happen. But Carroll, as you mentioned, Chris, I mean, maybe his savant page doesn't wow you as much because he doesn't have as big of a power, though. He's still, you know, pretty solid power. He's been around 41% hard hit each of the last 2 years, but, you know, K-rate's been below 20%. He's just kind of improving as a pure hitter. Walk rate has been ticking up each of the last 2 years. Same with the zone and overall contact. chase rate dropped about 3% this past year. So those minor things that, kind of give you, some hope that that can, stick moving forward. And you can see that obviously you get that average OBP back up to maybe closer to where it was in 2023, hopefully giving a full healthy year from Corbin Carroll. So I think, I wouldn't be surprised if he kind of approached 2023 again, 25-54, hitting 285, 362 OBP. I mean, even with the 40-point OBP drop, he still scored 121 runs this past year while not really doing a whole lot of anything in the first half of the year. So could we see him get up to like 135, 140 runs, get back up to like 25, 50-ish, bring the average OBP back up 30, 40 points? Absolutely. So I think both are good buys right now. I mean, obviously, it's going to be super high price tag, but I mean, this might be the lowest their price tag is over the next several years. I think there's a better chance both of their values go up than down in the coming years. But if I had to pick one to invest in right now at cost, I guess I would lean Corbin Carroll. But obviously still both very, very talented players. And I think 2024 is going to be just hopefully this is the weird year for each of them and they can get back to being elite studs here moving forward. Next one here, speaking of the young, up-and-coming, rising studs here, we got the Wyatt Langford, James Wood, Jackson Churio, Jackson Merrill. I put out a poll on the Toolshed account this afternoon, asking which one of these four would you rather invest in moving forward in Dynasty. Churio kind of ran away with it. He was 49.3%. And then Langford currently, this is still ongoing, so this will change, but Langford currently at 24.1%. And then Wood and Merrill are pretty close. Merrill 13.5% and James Wood 13.1%. So I guess it's kind of a loaded question, Chris. I mean, I always know where we have them ranked. I mean, we haven't gotten to all these names in our rankings yet, but, Chris has Churio 5, Langford 9, Wood 12, Merrill 13. I have Langford 8. Wood 10, Churio 11, and Merrill 14. So obviously we have them all ranked extremely highly, but I don't know. I just kind of think, I'll give you the floor. Attack these four however you want to here, Chris.
Oh, yeah. This is definitely an interesting group. And, for me, like what Jackson Churio showed was insane. I mean, his second half was incredible. He got better as the year went on, and that's kind of what you'd expect, right, from a 20-year-old. He floundered a bit out of the gate, and everybody was like, oh, he's not ready. They shouldn't have signed him to an extension. The man turned 20 in spring training March 11th, and they threw him in the majors right out of the gate. Like, I'm not sure what you expected to happen if you had those expectations he was going to hit right away, but that's hard to do. And you look at the progress. You look at the strides that he made, and I think it was just so notable to see how Churio made the improvements in so many aspects, not only with the surface level numbers, but also with the underlying data as well. I think Churio, like if you're looking at a player that could be like the next number one overall dynasty type, like I'm riding with Jackson Churio here because one, the age, how he handled major league pitching at that age, and the improvements that he steadily made. There's going to be power and speed. Like, you're going to get that. I mean, he had 2020 season his rookie year at 20 years old. There's a lot of value in that. We're looking at somebody that hits the ball incredibly hard, 45% hard hit rate. So the hard hit rates are there. The EVs are there. The barrel rate, it was right at league average, but I expect that to improve. I don't think it stays there for Jackson Churio. So for the upside play of all of these, I'm riding Churio, even over like a James Wood type. They all have some sort of flaw, I guess, in some way that kind of holds them back. James Wood, it's just the inability to lift and pull the ball. I mean, if he can get the ball near the pool side, he's going to hit 40 home runs. Like, I think that's a real possibility. But that's something he struggled with his entire career. Can he get to that? Now, Merrill's interesting because he's such kind of a well-rounded profile. We actually saw Merrill's profile flip a little bit from where he was in the minors, where he was much more aggressive in the majors and it paid off. I'm talking like a low 20-22% chase rate in his time in the minors. And he ran a 34% chase rate in the majors. Didn't necessarily affect him. The walk rate was lower than you'd like to see from Jackson Merrill, but it didn't matter because everything else was so good. I mean, you're talking like top of the scale sweet spot rate. So hitting the ball at ideal launch angles consistently. We're talking about really, really good exit velocities too. And again, 21 years old, Jackson Merrill, another player who they threw in the opening day lineup. He went over to Korea with them for that first series, and he held his own all year. So props to Jackson Merrill for an awesome year. I think that he's probably the highest floor play of any of these, just given how good the contact skills are. I think we see the plate approach get back to minor league levels with Jackson Merrill. So I think looking at him, he might be my floor play here. Now, Langford, I mean, Langford had his ups and downs, but at the end of the day, he still had an awesome year. I mean, while the surface numbers won't necessarily tell you he had a great year, he still went 16-19, home run, stolen bases, and put up a 740 OPS with a respectable slash. But Langford drastically improved at the end of the year. This is what we'd like to see out of the rookies, them take the steps forward, doing the right things, and seeing the results come, because that's honestly what Wyatt Langford was doing all year. He was showing good things. He just wasn't necessarily getting the results. Second half results, overall, they weren't the best. But if you look month to month what happened, we did see some notable improvements where Langford began to pull the ball significantly more. He got the ball in the air more often, and those things led to the results. Langford was doing all the right things. The results came as just experience, learning major league pitching, all those things, I think. And you look at the September for Langford, he had 8 home runs. He had 300. Those are really positive things to take into 2025. So they're all fun targets, but I would ride with Churio as my upside play, and I'd take Jackson Merrill as my floor play.
Man, yeah, it's you can go a million different ways with these guys. I definitely agree that Merrill is the floor play here. He's probably the least sexy of the bunch and has the lowest upside. And it's funny, whenever people seem to get really mad about my Merrill ranking, but again, he's still top 25 overall, which is pretty damn good right now. You got to wonder, you know, I hate to say this about a young player, but like, do you see like another like huge jump from Merrill? Do you see him being like a, you know, 30 plus, 20 plus guy? I mean, what he did last year was really good. And that, I'm not saying there's no room to build, but I don't think he has the same level of upside that, you know, these other three have, that Wood, Churio, and Langford have. I mean, I think Merrill could settle in as a top 2 round talent. He's basically already there. I don't think he has round 1 talent. I think the other three do. Wood, I think I have the least amount of confidence in Wood getting there, because as you like, though he has absolutely has the upside. He could hit 30 plus home runs. He's very fast for his size. Obviously, he's a big guy, but you know, he's a very top-notch athlete, very strong, could be 30-plus, 30-plus. But the ground ball rate, as you mentioned, Chris, it was very, very high. I think it was around, like, what, 57% in the major leagues. But still, he still had, even, you know, though he did have that higher ground ball rate, I mean, he was still on, close to a 20-30 pace this past year, 9 home runs, 14 steals. In 336 plate appearances. He had the highest hard hit rate of any of these guys, 52%. Also had, you know, K rate around 29%. Barrel rate was 10.5%. EV close to 93 miles an hour. He hit the ball really hard, but, it was 55% ground ball rate, but still very high. I want to see that kind of get trimmed down a little bit, even if it's down to like the mid to upper 40s, which is still a little bit high. I think that'll definitely be huge. Z could be 30-30 this year. I don't really think that potential is in there. So he's kind of maybe has the highest upside of the bunch. But for me, I have Langford ranked first out of this bunch, because I fully believe in what we saw from Langford in September, where he was one of the best hitters in baseball. I mean, and we saw that he had, you know, phenomenal, you know, data in college, and he's got, you know, a great blend of, like, I think he has the best overall approach of this bunch. I mean, Wood is a little bit higher walk rate, but also has a higher K rate. So when you kind of blend the ability to take walks with the ability to keep the K rate in check, you know, I think the best blend of those two goes to Wyatt Langford. And while he doesn't quite have the power of James Wood, I mean, we're still talking about a 43% hard hit rate last year that got better as the year went on. He was a 98th percentile sprint speed. He had better than league average overall in zone contact rates. He was better contact than Jackson Churio. I mean, Churio is probably the sexiest name out of these bunch. That's why he's kind of leading this poll that I put out there and nearly has half the votes. So I get that that's probably more of the consensus right now, and there's nothing wrong with that whatsoever. They're all super close in my rankings, especially these three. Merrill is a little bit behind these three, but I lean Langford. I think he has the best blend. I know something I talk about a lot with prospects, you know, kind of that blend of ceiling and floor. And I think the best blend by a hair for me goes to Wyatt Langford. But again, very close. And I do think this would be a time when all three of these guys, Langford, Wood, Churio, are first-round picks. I mean, it's got hard to crack into there, given all the names we've already talked about, plus, you know, the shortstops, you know, Otani, et cetera. Hard to crack into that kind of top 10 to 15 range. But I think all three of these guys have the talent to do so. All right, let's go on to 11 through 20 here, but to kind of recap the top 10, Chris had Juan Soto, Kyle Tucker, Ronald Acuna Jr., Julio Rodriguez, Jackson Churio, Aaron Judge, Fernando Tatis Jr., Corbin Carroll, Wyatt Langford, Yordan Alvarez. I had Juan Soto, Acuna Jr., Tucker, Judge, Tatis Jr., Corbin Carroll, Betts, Langford, J-Rod, and James Wood.
At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
My 11 through 20 is Jackson Churio, Yordan Alvarez, Jaron Duran, Jackson Merrill, Michael Harris II, Jazz Chisholm Jr., Roman Anthony, Lawrence Butler, Riley Green, and maybe the most polarizing player in all of baseball, or one of them at least, Luis Robert, who I have no idea where I want to rank. He's absolutely one of my like three to four toughest players to rank. But right, for right now, it's probably going to change, but he's 20 for now. Chris, who you got 11 through 20?
Yeah, so I've got Mookie Betts at 11, followed by James Wood, Jackson Merrill, Jaron Duran, and Riley Green. And then 16 through 20 is Michael Harris, Jazz Chisholm, Kyle Schwarber, Roman Anthony, and Brian Reynolds, who I'm always higher than everybody on Brian Reynolds, but I love the consistency there.
Oh, yeah, he's super. I think it's maybe the Pittsburgh thing. Is it the Pittsburgh effect where all the outside of O'Neill Cruz, because he's like the big flashy one, most of these guys get underrated. I mean, Skeens won't, but, you know, he's definitely like the epitome of being just super steady and solid, but not flashy. But at an end of every year, it's like, oh, another back end top 100 value there for Brian Reynolds. Man, my brains went to mush for a second there. But let's start with Lawrence Butler, one of the breakouts of the 2024 season. I mean, there was a point during, like July, middle part of August, it was like a 6-7 week or so stretch where Lawrence Butler and Brent Rooker were, you know, right up there with Judge and Soto in terms of like how much value they're providing in that time frame of the season. And overall, Butler in 451 plate appearances, 22 home runs, 18 steals, and was not caught. Perfect on the base pass. Love to see that. 262, 317, 490 slash. But you look at, you know, he didn't really do much. March, April, May, June. I mean, he hit 200 or less all four of those months. Was getting sporadic playing time. But then July. Look at this July for Lawrence Butler. 98 plate appearances. 363, 408, 802. 18 extra base hits, 10 home runs, 4 steals. And then went 8 home runs, 4 steals in August, 2 and 6 in September. You know, still had pretty solid slash lines in those months. So post All-Star break, 300, 345, 553, 13 home runs, and 12 steals. I mean, you know, Chris, you don't have him. I have him 20. You have him a few spots lower. We'll get, you know, you'll see people hear his ranking on Butler next episode, unless, you know, Chris wants to say it. But we're both fairly close on Butler. How much are you buying into the Lawrence Butler breakout? I mean, I'm not going like Gaga, put him top 10 yet level, but I'm pretty much, you know, not all in, but close to it with Butler, because look at under the hood, like good quality of contact. You know, he was 47% hard hit, 11% barrel rate, not a burner, but a solid runner and a good efficient runner going into a ballpark that should be at least a little better, you know, than Oakland. Not a massive upgrade there, but I think a little bit of an upgrade, and contact skills that are at least close to league average, just a tick below both zone and overall. So I think potential, you know, 30-20 year is in store, maybe 30-25, something like that. And the Oakland lineup could be sneaky decent. So yeah, I'm definitely pretty in on Lawrence Butler. How about you?
Yeah, and he's one that I had a close eye on coming into the season, just given that from 2022 to 2023, we were looking at a 10% contact jump. And somebody found a random tweet I had last offseason about it, and they were like, job well done. I forgot I even tweeted that. It was like basically something along the lines of, watch out for Lawrence Butler. His contact rate jumps from 66% overall in 2022 to 76% in 2023, just given the skills. And they stuck. Like, I didn't know if it would stick, because this is somebody that for his whole career has struggled with contact. Very toolsy player that we didn't know where the contact would fall. And Butler just made those steady improvements, and it's carried over. I mean, 6'3", great athlete, moves well, hits the ball incredibly hard. Now the contact rates have improved. That ballpark is going to be really nice, I think, for Butler, who hit 22 home runs last year in just 451 plate appearances. That's obviously worth noting, that he might be a 30 home run threat at some points of his career. I'm not saying he's going to do 30 next year, but he hits the ball very hard. He barrels it up at elite rates. Butler's launch angles are ideal. And the contact now is good enough where he's putting enough balls in play where I believe that the profile can work. 11% barrel rate, that's strong. The sweet spot rate, 35%, that'll play. I mean, that's fine. Hard hit rate, 47.5%, really solid. I think Lawrence Butler, I'm pretty in on. His cost is going up pretty high, but for good reason. I mean, we've seen the improvements that Butler has made, and I believe, I'm buying in. I think that you should feel pretty comfortable with where he's at this point, and the lineup's better for one. Like, I think the Athletics lineup's only going to get better, so that helps around him for accounting stats, runs, RBI totals and such, and he's going to run. Like, I don't think they hold him back from stealing 20 bases, so I think Butler this year may go 25-20. And if it's with a respectable average, then I think you'll be pretty happy rostering him on your team.
Yeah, I mean, he's someone that I ended up keeping in my home keeper league. Never thought that would be the case, or, you know, beginning of the season or even when I picked him up. But he definitely, I think he's definitely in that top 50-ish, you know, either just inside of it or just outside of it overall range, and with room to move up. I mean, I wouldn't say, I don't think we'll ever get up to, you know, the range of even guys we just talked about, like, you know, the Langford, Churio range, but could he get close to Merrill? Yeah, absolutely. Could he get like top 25 level? I definitely think that's in play here, because there's no like massive red flag. I mean, is he a little aggressive? Sure, his walk rate not super high. Yeah, but he hits the ball hard. Again, he's a really efficient base stealer, even if he's not a burner on the base paths. So yeah, I think you could see, yeah, I mean, he was already on like a 30-25 or so pace last year. I think you could see him push that this year and just be a good five category contributor and, you know, above average power speed blend there. So yeah, I'm definitely looking to buy Lawrence Butler wherever I can. And the same could be said for this next guy here, Michael Harris. I mean, it's kind of frustrating in a way, Chris, because, you know, obviously we've yet to see like that full year from Harris. He's been chilling in that, you know, 400, 500 plate appearance range, you know, 539 is currently his career best. That was in 2023. But he's been pretty good, you know, in his 3 years. You know, almost went 20-20 each of his first 2 years with a, you know, average in the 290 to 300 range, OBP 330, 340, you know, solid slug, you know, give or take 500 a little bit either way. And last year, even though the, you know, slash one did dip across the board down to 264, 304, 418, I mean, he still had, you know, a better than league average K rate. Quality of contact was right in line, like basically. His quality of contact has basically been, you know, the same every single year. So like, there's no big drop-offs. You know, contact rates are about the same too. So yeah, there's no like big drop-off that was like, oh, that's why the, you know, performance is a little lower. So I mean, obviously, we'd love to see him get a full year in finally, but still only, what is he, 23, 24 years old now. I think there's best yet to come from Michael Harris. So he's a big dynasty buy for me right now.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I think Harris is a really good bat. And I think that at this point, he's just gotten pretty underrated, just given the fact that, one, he hasn't been on the field regularly, and you mentioned that. And last year was a bit of a down year from a performance standpoint. We saw the average take a good little hit down to 264 after he had hit north of 290 for the previous two seasons. But I still believe in Michael Harris's talent. I mean, he's still young. He'll turn 24 during spring training in March. So that's obviously something to factor in. He debuted super young. He's a Gold Glove caliber center fielder, so he's going to stay in the field every day, no matter how the bat plays. Yeah, he's aggressive. He chases a lot, but he also makes really good contact to counteract it. And I think the quality of contact is good. I mean, Harris hits the ball much harder than you'd think. Looking at his frame, he barrels it up well. 47% hard hit rate for Michael Harris. The bat speed, high end. I'm pretty interested in taking shots on Michael Harris this offseason, just given the fact that the cost is pretty diminished at this point. I think people are concerned that we'll never see that full season and see it all put together. There's definitely 25-25 potential here in my mind.
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe even a little bit more than that. Would you be shocked if he got close to a 30-30 year? I wouldn't. I think that upside is absolutely there with Michael Harris. I mean, maybe he won't go 30-30, but 25 to 30 of each. I think that one of those years is absolutely coming up here. And he's just a good five-category guy. I mean, he's a hit for a good average. Maybe the OBP will be a little bit lower. He's never been a big walk rate guy. So, you know, tick down in OBP formats. But, you know, I think this is a guy that could be just above average across the board, five-category guy. And I think that Atlanta offense, as we said before, is going to be much better this year. I mean, hopefully you get Acuna back a little bit into the season. You know, Matt Olson, Austin Riley, they kind of had a little bit of down years too. So I think that Atlanta lineup in general is due for a pretty solid bounce back. All right, next guy up here, Riley Green of the Tigers, coming in his age 24-25 season. At his best year of his career last year in his third season. He's another guy kind of like Harris who was kind of chilling in those 400 plate appearance range, but had 584 plate appearances last year. 262, 348, 479 slash line, 82 runs, 24 home runs, 74 RBI, 4 steals as well. You know, Chris, you know, we both kind of have him, I believe, what, it's like back end, top 20. You have him 15, I have him 19, so you have that 15 to 20 range. Do you think, I mean, maybe this is kind of the range that Green stays in, or do you think there's another level? Like, would you be looking to buy right now in hopes of him and maybe getting up into that next tier above where he is right now?
I really like Riley Green. He's certainly somebody that I'm all over where I can. I think that I've got him as a top 40-ish dynasty asset, I think. Should look, I just finished up dynasty rankings, so I could tell you exactly where I have him. I've got him 39, so yeah, right in that range for Riley Green. And I buy the changes that he made. Everybody's quick to point to the home ballpark with Detroit. It's terrible. Doesn't matter. Green hits, and he hits the ball really hard. He had one of the better barrel rates in the game. He ran one of the higher average exit velocities, hard hit rate, sweet spot rate, like everything was there. And this is somebody that struggled substantially with ground balls. And there's an interview back in spring training last year where he's very angry about the fact that he hits the ball on the ground so much. And he used quite a few explicitives in the interview about how he needs to lift the ball more. And he did that. I mean, you look at the sweet spot rate's notable. 90th percentile sweet spot rate, that's significant. Ground ball rate went down. Love to see that. I mean, it was a notable drop, like 6% drop in ground ball rate. That's huge. Also, like, he doesn't really pop the ball up either. It's like healthy fly balls and line drives when he does get it in the air. So I think Riley Green, really good. I don't think he's going to run much. I wouldn't expect stolen bases from him. But another player that we've talked about a lot of these guys, injury prone. We haven't seen a full season from him. Last year was a career high 584 plate appearances for him, and he hit 24 home runs. But I'd still like to see him get the full season, get to 650, and see what happens. There's 30 home runs in this bat. Does he steal 7 bags? Maybe. And I'm okay with that given the rest of the profile. I think the hit tool is fine. You look at the contact rates and, yeah, I mean, they're not the best. But I think it's passable given the rest of the skill set with Riley Greene. That bat's potent. He's got serious power. I mean, the zone contact rate's near 81%. Like, I believe that it can play. So I'm firmly buying into Riley Greene this year.
I wouldn't say I'm firmly buying in, but I am buying in. Like, in general, I like Riley Greene. I think he's a guy that I would love to have as my number 2 outfielder. I wouldn't want him as my number 1,
yes.
But I think he'd be just a really good number 2 outfielder. I do think there's another level here for Riley Greene. Is it top 25 overall level? Probably not. I have him ranked a little bit lower in my overall. I have him ranked 52 right now. But could he get up into like that 30-35 range? Yeah, I do think he can get into that range. It's not top 25, though. I don't think he... I mean, it's hard to get up there. You either need to be like elite power with a good average to get up there if you're not going to run, or provide, you know, more speed than he does. Because he's always been like a middle-of-the-road runner. Never one that showed that he wanted to run much. He has 12 steals combined in his first 3 years, you know, 4 last year. I don't think he's ever more than, you know, a handful. You know, maybe he gets up to 8 or 9. I don't even think he ever gets to 10. Even in today's age where steals are on the rise every year, it seems like. But, yeah, I definitely echo the sentiment where there's definitely like more power upside there, especially if... I mean, it's going to be crucial to have that better launch angle, the lower ground ball right stick, but that's trended down the last 2 years, the ground ball right, 57%, 49%, 43.5%. You know, the launch angle has gone up accordingly, so is a sweet spot rate, 32 to 37 to 39%. That's all good to see. K rate, a little on the higher end, but 27, 28%. So that's fine. Walk rate ticked up this year about 2.5%, up to 11% after being in the 8.5% range first 2 years of his career. So yeah, I think you could add a bit, you know, maybe 5, 6, 7 more home runs, get up in that 30 range with a handful of steals. He'll hit you 260, 270, something like that, with a, you know, 350, 360 OBP. So good OBP asset as well. And I think that the Detroit lineup is, you know, it's got a lot of good young talent in it. I think that could be an above average offense overall, and he'll hit higher in that lineup. So I think he'll give you a decent amount of runs in RBI as well. So yeah, I think there's definitely a step up. I don't think he's gonna be an elite player, but just a very good, you know, top end outfield 2 caliber hitter. I think that's definitely what we're looking at here from Riley Greene. But let's end the show with Luis Roberts. I mean, I have him still top 20 for now. Chris, I don't know if you want to let people know where you have Luis Robert, but you did not have him top 20. And it's hard to, you know, just figure out where you want to rank this guy, because we've seen the elite top end Luis Robert. I mean, just, you know, 2 seasons ago, 38 home runs, 20 steals, scored 90 runs, hit a .542 slug that year. But right around that, sandwiched, you know, around that big year was 2 years of barely over 400 plate appearances, 401, 425. That 2023 year is the only year where he played more than 500, or made more than 500 plate appearances. Only has 2 years over 100 games. I mean, yeah, he's only been in the league for 5 years. The first one of which was 2020, where he actually played 56 games out of that 60. But the average has fluctuated hard from 224 last year up to 338 in 2021. I mean, obviously, he's super aggressive, big power, big speed, injury prone. I mean, Chris, there's so many, you know, big positives and big negatives here. So how do you kind of put all those together and formulate a, you know, fair ranking for the guy right now?
It's hard. I mean, he hasn't stayed healthy. Like, that's obviously been an issue, that he hasn't been on the field regularly. We've got the best year out of him in 2023, and there were still major red flags for Robert right that year. I mean, you looked at the chase rate, it was astronomical. The contact rates weren't great, and it certainly left some thoughts with regressions coming. Then you factor in the injuries, you factor in he's played on the worst team in the history of baseball, wants to be traded. All these things just don't go go well. Now, what's the expectation for Luis Robert in 2025? That's a great question. I think that he's on this team. He's on the White Sox team until midseason. I guess I think they're hoping that he can rebuild some value, and then they trade him. So if that's the case, then I don't know what the production's like. That lineup's going to be bad. The run totals might be, run RBI totals might not be there. We will see, but I don't have high hopes. I have Luis Robert ranked 25 in the outfield rankings. Is there room to jump back up? Absolutely. But outside of 2023, there's really not been much in the tank that suggests that Robert is a top-tier dynasty outfielder right now. So I'm more out than I am in, though I acknowledge if he goes to a contender, gets that spark reignited, there could be a big resurgence here for Luis Robert.
You know, we talk about this, you know, often with prospects that are kind of at a crossroad in their development, like having that be that show me year, not like a make or break year, but you know, show me, like, are you going to be who we think you're going to be, or are you going to be a different version of that? I feel like this is kind of like this show me year for Luis Robert. And actually, maybe you could even go into that make or break territory, because, you know, show me you can stay on the field, show me you can stay healthy, and we know the talent's in there. I mean, you've shown that, you know, several times, including 2023 mostly. So can he get into a new team and get, you know, kind of, again, rejuvenated? I mean, a lot of those players, I think, were mentally checked out with the White Sox last year on that, you know, all-time bad pace. But, you know, if it's another year of this roller coaster production, roller coaster, you know, of being on the field or on the IL, I mean, if it's another year like that, like we've seen for the most part from him in his career, I'm going to drop him down considerably. I mean, he's probably still be top 100, but he'll be more on like the back end of that. I mean, similar to kind of what we were saying about like Royce Lewis. I mean, super high, you know, talent level, but you got to stay in the field to produce. We can't win on a per game basis here with these guys, especially if they're guys you want to, you know, be part of your core, you know, top end of your roster here. So if we're not going to get that from Robert, I mean, he's still, was he 27? Yeah, 27 years old. So it's not, he's like about to be turned 30. So this year, I'm like, all right, show me you can stay in the field and then I'll keep you as an elite, you know, asset in my rankings. Or if not, you're dropping down a considerable amount. And I have him in a couple of dynasty leagues. I might be looking to even sell low on him just to get rid of him at that point. If that's another year what we see from him. But he could be a good buy right now. I mean, it's all a matter of how risk adverse you are and how confident you are that he can, you know, bounce back, stay healthy, and stay on the field. That's the big thing. So definitely one of the hardest players for me to rank right now overall, not just at this position. But that is going to wrap up part one of our outfield dynasty rankings. We will be back again on Friday with part two. But until then, everyone take care.
At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.